Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
For the best Championship, League One and League Two coverage, Acton Mool recommends the Football League paper. It's got it all covered. For the complete EFL picture, get the Football League paper, £1.50 every Sunday, or visit theleaguepaper.com for a variety of digital subscriptions. The Football League paper. It's got it covered.
You're listening to Acton Mool, broadcasting from the beautiful South Birmingham. Accept no substitute.
Well, hello, dear listeners. Welcome to a short, sharp, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am edition of Acton Millwall. My name is Nick Hart. This is, of course, the number one podcast broadcasting from South Bermondsey. We're due to play Burnley later tonight, dear listeners, in the what's become called the EFL Cup, the Carabao Cup, which is some kind of high-energy drink from Thailand, apparently. I've never actually bought a can of Carabao. I don't know if you have. But it occurred to me, Millwall versus Burnley, it's a fixture. I know Burnley are in the Premier League these days and are, you know, they sit with the highest in the land, and manager Sean Dyche is even now, you know, making unwise comments on Twitter about the need for lack of need, as he sees it, for the highest of football to support those that are destitute in the world thanks to COVID. Anyway, we won't dwell on that for too long. So we know that Burnley these days are a Premier League side, but for much of the time that we've played them over our history, they've been a fairly middling second division, third division side. Now, it occurred to me, Millwall versus Burnley, it's a fixture that's never actually generated any standout memories in my mind. You know, many clubs you come across in this life, you can think of moments or situations or games where, you know, something's happened that, or there's a rivalry, or, you know, there's some kind of electricity when you mention the fixture. But Mill versus Burnley, and I'm just looking at 11versus11.com, which is a football record site, to me, it's never generated any great games. You correct me if you think I'm wrong. If you can think of a Mill versus Burnley game that's electrified your pulse, you know, got the old synapses racing in your mind. I can't think of any off the top of my head. Last time we played Burnley was in 2013-14. That was a 2-2 draw at home in November 2013. Mill 2, Burnley 2. I can't remember that game. Can you, dear listener? And then an away loss in the February 2014, 3-1 to Burnley up there at Turf Moor. It's the proverbial tough away fixture, northern away fixture in our world. Maybe it's the same from their perspective coming down to the Den. It's one of those fixtures that has, you know, kind of home advantage built into it. I know a trip to Burnley historically was always a bit of a naughty day out, naughty bastard day out, so to speak. And certainly my memories from the 70s was that when Burnley came to the Den, they were one of the few teams that would actually, you know, give it a go. And you know what I mean by that, dear listener. I know you're of a certain vintage. If you're listening to this nostalgic show, you know what I mean by the fact that I say Burnley and Cardiff were one of the few clubs that would come and give it a go at the Den, with, you know, hilarious results, of course. So Millwall v Burnley is not exactly the most inspirational fixture ever. We've played them, what's that? It's about 60 times, and it splits three ways, to be honest. Games won, 21 games for Burnley. Games drawn, 19. Games won by Millwall, 19. So it's 21, 19, 19. It's pretty much a three-way split. As I've said, I can't think of any real standout fixtures over time between the two clubs. But I am looking today, dear listener, at the very first league meeting between Burnley and Millwall, which happened in 1930, the 11th of October 1930. And that was a 2-1 victory for Burnley. And as is my wont, I've dug out a newspaper report from the Athletic News, no less, dated October the 13th, 1930. The headline of the match report, Burnley's last kick drama, the error that led to Millwall's fall. Virile defence, says their correspondent, goes by the pen name of Centaurus. Why have sports correspondents, dear listeners, done away with the idea of pseudonyms or pen names? Nom de plume. Why don't we have that anymore? And why don't they use headlines like virile defence anymore? I think it should all be brought back. Match report says Burnley 2, Millwall 1. Real hard striving and persistence in attack. In the face of a magnificent opposition, that's us, dear listener, Millwall, had a well-deserved reward for Burnley, though it was only the last kick of the game that Burnley scored the goal which won the match. So close to full time was it that the whistle blew as the players walked towards the middle of the field. So as they scored, as they were walking back, the final whistle was gone. And the dramatic finish was hailed with a big shout. There was not a great deal to choose between the two sides in the first half, says the Athletic News. Though even then, Burnley were the more impressive as an attacking force. And Yule undoubtedly saved his side with some wonderful efforts. Now, that Yule is Duncan Yule. I'm going to come back to Duncan Yule because I like to deliver unto you, dear listener, the more obscure Mill players from the past. And I think Duncan Yule shouldn't be put in that category. I'm sure not many people might have heard of him, goalkeeper from Scotland. As a department, there was nothing to equal the Mill halfback, says the very florid way of speaking. As a department, there was nothing to equal the Mill halfback, says the Athletic News, and especially their wing halfbacks. But the error was made in not feeding Wadsworth more frequently. That's our striker. And Storer, another Millwall player, was very weak and allowed him any amount of latitude. Don't quite follow that, but anyway, there we are. The Millwall attack as a whole was very poor and gave very little help to a harassed defence. I can follow that. Whilst the way Cock, that's Jack Cock, was subdued by O'Dowd, who was not in his best form, was a big surprise. Yule gave a great exhibition, so that's why I'm going to focus on Duncan Yule. And so did his back, so had a gruelling time. The Millwall team is listed as Yule, Moran, Pipe, Newcomb, Sweetman, Graham, Wadsworth, Landells, Jack Cock, Forsyth and Poxton. Now, this would be in October 1930. The 1930-31 season was in Division 2. Burnley had not long been relegated from the top flight. They were, of course, founder members of the Football League back in 1888. But they were finding life increasingly difficult and had been relegated a couple of seasons before. So they were a second division side, a couple of years standing by the time this fixture took place. The crowd up there at Turf Moor is listed on the Millwall History website as in the region of 10,000. Sometimes the crowds in those old days were a little, guessed at rather than accurate. This would be a middle-ranking season for Millwall. We finished 14th in the table in Division 2 above Charlton. Promoted that year were Everton and West Brom from Division 2. Relegated being Reading and Cardiff, bottom two. So on to Duncan Yule, because it struck me that he's not a name that is particularly well-known. Not much on Wikipedia about the player, but there is stuff on the wider internet if you search for it. There's a great photo of him in 1935 playing at the Den, muddy goal mouth at the Coldblow Lane end, the old stand opposite. It's a Getty image, so they've got their logo plastered all over it. But it's a great photograph. Square posts as well. That's one for the kids back in the old days. I think in Scotland until relatively recently, square posts rather than round posts were the order of the day. So that's on Getty Images. So dig that one out and don't and be wary of their copyright because they're a bit hot on that. But anyway, it's worth a look. But what I did find was a website called vintagefootballers.com, and it's got a picture of Duncan Yule wearing his wonderful old knitted polo neck. Goalkeepers used to wear polo necks and often flat caps back in these times. It's an image taken in 1935. And there's a nice biography of him on it, which I thought I would just read in its entirety, because I think that Duncan Yule was one of our better goalkeepers of the day. So it's listed as Old Kirkpatrick, Dumbartonshire-born Duncan Yule began his football career with Clydebank Juniors in 1921 before joining Scottish League St Mirren in 1923, for whom he made 7 appearances. After a brief spell on loan at Clydebank in early 1925, he joined Dumbarton in 1926 and was a regular goalkeeper for the next 2 seasons, making 64 appearances and attracting the attention of Glasgow Rangers, who signed him in 1928. Yule made his debut for the Jers the same month in a Scottish Cup tie at East Stirlingshire, which Rangers won 6-0. And then he played 4 further matches for them during January and February before being displaced by Tom Hamilton. He then signed for Millwall, 2nd Division Millwall, in the summer of 1930, making his Football League debut against Reading that September and playing for Millwall throughout the 1930s. Initially, Yule held the gloves before losing his place in 1931 to a former Newcastle goalkeeper called Willie Wilson, who remained ever present for the remainder of the season. That's the season we're talking about, 1930-31. So he was in tussling with Willie Wilson for the goalkeeper spot. And throughout the remainder of the early 1930s, he remained as understudy to Wilson during that period. He came into his own more in the late 30s. Mill had been relegated to the 3rd Division. And Yule was the undisputed number one, as it puts it here, through to the end of 1937-38. And he played in our 1937 FA Cup semi-final team, which lost to the eventual winners, Sunderland, at Leeds Road, Huddersfield. His Mill career was ended, as so many other careers were ended in different ways, by the Second World War, the onset of war in September 1939, by which time Duncan Yule had made 211 appearances for the Lions before he returned to Scotland to rejoin Dumbarton, making a further 23 appearances 1939-40 before he retired from the game. So that's as much as I know about Duncan Yule. There's a great photo of him. I will copy this and post it with this particular episode, which I hope you've enjoyed. Mill versus Burnley. Tonight's game is a Carabao Cup action, being shown on the Carabao Cup channel, which is a strange concept, not via iFollow, but hey-ho, there we are. But I thought it would just serve to whet your appetite for tonight's match. Can you think of any exciting Mill versus Burnley games that you want to mention? If you can, reply to this thread on Twitter. I can't think of any. So hopefully tonight will be one of the most astounding games ever between our two clubs.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Achtung, Mehlball.
The Achtung Millwall yearbook is now available via the millwallsupportersclub.co.uk store. Visit the millwallsupportersclub.co.uk store and buy your copy of the Achtung Millwall yearbook. Just £13, including postage and packing within the UK. It's 128 pages worth of Millwall news, views and opinion. It's a great Christmas present. Visit the millwallsupportersclub.co.uk store. All profits will benefit Demelza, Evelina and the Mill Community Trust Foods Delivery Service. Coming up next on Achtung Mill, dear listener, we have a recording that I made for the Besotted Brentford podcast.
I sent it over to them earlier today, so I thought I'd just stick that into the show for your listening and aural delectation. So this is a piece recorded for the Brentford Besotted podcast.
Achtung, Mehlball.
Well, hello, listeners. My name is Nick Hart. I am the presenter, the producer, the driving force behind my podcast, which is called Achtung Millwall, as in the Germanic word for attention or warning. Achtung Millwall. I've been a Millwall fan since 1972, so in that time I've seen us hit the some lows, some very, very highs, and sometimes some middling seasons with moments of ecstatic glory mixed in. That's the way of the lion. It's a mixed bag being a Millwall fan. Millwall, of course, went into the strange Project Restart games at the end of last season, back in June, July. Seems a long time ago now, strangely, but we came into it with high hopes. We were on a surge of form under manager Gary Rowett. I think probably more than any other club, and I'd say this with all due respect to all of the other clubs in the division, we missed our home advantage. The Den is still a unique environment in many ways, and more than any other club, we missed that energy, that kind of home intimidatory factor that makes us, in our eyes at least, such a special club. So to run through Billy's questions, number one, not a bad start for Millwall. Unbeaten this season, that's right, with a win and a draw in the league and a couple of wins in the EFL Cup too, if we're counting those. How are you pleased with how you've kicked off? Yeah, it's been a good start to the season. A draw against Stoke, 0-0 at home. Very physical side, Stoke. They came to try and boss the game, and as I've said already, in the absence of fans in the Den, they were able to do that to a large extent, especially in the first half. We didn't really carve out many chances. One good chance late in the second half, but that will be our hurdle for the season, is the creation and scoring of chances. I think we'll look defensively solid. We certainly kept Stoke at bay under a lot of pressure. And then the same again last weekend up at Rotherham, similar kind of style of club, perhaps with a slightly more forceful and less skilled approach, perhaps, at Rotherham. But again, it was a bit like bombardment up there. And the defence and goalkeeper, Bart Bielkowski, our player of the season last year, stood firm. And I think that will be our rock upon which we may or may not build a challenge this year. The main issue for us to solve is the attacking side of it, the creation of chances, and certainly then the execution of them in front of goal. And on that subject, I'm hoping that our loan signing for the season, Troy Parrott, who's loaned from Spurs, will be fit enough to make a start against Brentford on Saturday. A lot of hope is being invested in Troy. He's only 18. He comes to us with a YouTube reputation for, European-level scoring in various Premier League-style tournaments. So he would certainly be the missing piece in our jigsaw. We always have the old, faithful, good old Matt Smith, who was top scorer last season, in actual fact. Matt I like, and I think if you serve Matt up the chances and the crossing and the right kind of crosses, he'll get your goals. So a lot rests, I think, on the younger movement and footballing brain of Troy Parrott, but we do have Matt Smith to fall back on if it comes to a late 20-minute, last 20-minute up and under style of approach.
Achtung, Mehlball.
Gary Rowett showed what he could do last season. Are you happy with him, manager? Yeah, very, very happy. Neil Harris's time, as much as he's a club legend as a player and to some extent as a manager too, but Neil Harris's time was up with a capital U and a capital P when he left us in October 2019, which seems forever ago. It's a year ago now, nearly. Since then, Gary Rowett has come in with one or two additions to the squad over time since. We've got the loan of Mason Bennett, or the signing of Mason Bennett now, the loan of Ryan Woods from Stoke, Mason Bennett from Derby, and as I've said already, the highly anticipated season-long loan of Troy Parrott from Spurs. Rowett's main change to the Millwall style is to Take us away slightly from the Neil Harris direct route, which was probably ultimately found out in a 4-0 crushing at Fulham last season, with the humiliating percentage of possession of 85% to Fulham and just 15% for us. That was probably the moment where everyone's switch went to overload, as the Boomtown Rats once sang. Since then, Rowett has introduced a more considered style, passing based perhaps to some degree, looking to work the channels down the flanks, get the likes now of Scott Malone, another signing in the summer, down the left, and Marlon Romeo, I'm presuming he's fit, was a very one of our best players on the right, with the likes of Jed Wallace and Mason Bennett operating in a slightly freer role on the left and right of the centre going forward. So he certainly introduced more subtlety into the middle tactics than perhaps Brentford might have expected traditionally on a trip to the Den. Question three. Many pundits have tipped Millwall for a playoff place this season. Are you confident you can make it? Well, as I've said, I started going in 1972, which is what, almost just short of 50 years worth of support for Mill, which is a galling thing to say out loud. One thing I've learned over my life following Millwall is you should never expect success. You are not there for the glory, the trophy cabinet, blah, blah, blah. I think we have a strong chance. I think if we can solve the conundrum of creation of chances and execution of those chances in front of goal, then yes, we have every chance to make certainly the top 10 with a shout for a top 6 place. Given the financial crisis that is going to afflict the game generally, that's not a bad thing to be able to say for a Mill supporter. Obviously, much remains to be seen on that front. None of us, Brentford or Mill alike, quite know how that's going to turn out. So we set sail in hope, as they said, on the trip to the Mayflower trip to the New World. I don't know what that's got to do with it. It just occurred to me. Question four, any significant movement in or out in the transfer window so far? Nothing in the transfer window. I mean, obviously, there was the loan signing of Troy Parrott that we've mentioned already. The signatures of Ryan Woods on loan for the season from Stoke, and Mason Bennett, two good players, influential in their different ways. Otherwise, nothing going out, which is unusual for the Lions. We haven't actually had to sell anyone. There's no kind of marquee signings. I get a sense, and I don't know how you see it from your new home in Shiny Kew, but I don't get a sense there's that much money flying around. And clearly with the COVID, you know, the impact of that, which has put the kibosh on all of our plans to restart in October, then who knows how much how much money there will be to knock about for the remainder of the season. We will see on that front. But those ones I've mentioned already are the main names to draw your attention to. Question five, a general reflection on football at present in general. Any reflections on the back end of last season? Any thoughts on the coming season? COVID, games, Millwall, other teams. Number five, well, we are living in the strangest period ever, aren't we? None of us, I think, listening to this show would have been around for the outbreak of the Second World War, but it's about the closest thing that I can think of in terms of such a kind of a cataclysmic effect on everyday in life. And as we're speaking on a sports football show on the game itself, none of us know how it's going to pan out, which is disconcerting to say the least. The government's late U-turn on the return of fans to football grounds from October the 1st has certainly caused consternation, to say the least, at the Den. I dare say it has at Brentford. Who knows whether the government has a handle on this? We are not a political show here, so I'm not going to say any more than this has been a very late in the day U-turn. Obviously, ultimately, life and death must prevail, but there's a whole debate about the safety of going to football when every day all of us listening to this show watch people get onto the underground or the bus or the train going into whichever destination from whichever part of London that you're listening to. There's a lot of questions that are raised, and the state of football, clearly, this is a crisis that runs to the very heart of football. The Premier League, of course, will sail on, although I think even reading today's reports, even the great behemoth of the Premier League will be feeling the chill if no fans are allowed in over the course of the whole season. Certainly the Championship, I'm not sure how we can carry on forever like we are at the moment with wages going out and, you know, only iFollow income coming in. I don't know how your iFollow service is, incidentally, Brentford listeners. Ours is utter pony. You can delete that, Billy, if that language is too strong for the show, mate. Who knows where it's going to lead us to? I've got a dread feeling, a dystopian dread feeling that it's leading us to a sealed NFL-style Premier League with a feeder championship of clubs able to survive the onslaught, and then, you know, a sea of desolation elsewhere across the game. I hope I'm wrong. I really am hope I'm wrong. But that is where I see it leading at the moment, unless someone can show me some hopeful, you know, birds fluttering on the horizon and the sun rising over distant uplands. That's where I see it headed at the moment. Question six. Can't remember which question it is. Question last, as they used to say in the Hill Street Blues. How do you think your lineup will line up on Saturday? I think it's almost certain you're going to see Bartosz Białkowski in goal. Can't imagine he won't be. The ever-present Jake Cooper will be the rock of defence alongside Sean Hutchinson, possibly Alex Pearce, possibly Murray Wallace. Those are the one or the other, I think, in a three-man back line. On the wings, I think you'll see Scott Malone on the left, and on the right, I would imagine Marlon Romeo. He did look a little rusty last weekend at Rotherham. He is coming back off an injury, so he may start. I hope he does start. He's a very talented boy and offers, with Malone on the left and Romeo on the right, if they're functioning on all cylinders, then that will be a very strong wing attack. Across the middle, almost certainly you're going to see ex-Brentford player Ryan Woods, who I understand was a player of the season in previous times gone by. He's really coming into his own. When I first saw him, I will be honest, I couldn't see what the fuss was about. But his kind of ability to pick the pass from deep positions has really come on strong over the post-lockdown period, and certainly this season. I think he'll be alongside Ryan Leonard, who seems to be favoured at the moment over Ben Thompson by manager Gary Rowlett. Up front, almost certainly you'll see Jed Wallace, one of our best players, scorer of a good goal last week at Rotherham at the New York Stadium. You'll probably see Mason Bennett, a player that I like, a troubled boy from Derby, but with talent and an ability to run, and one of these kind of classic players that Millwall seem to serve this purpose as, a kind of a rehabilitation centre for the lost, the sad and the lonely. And Mason, I think, likes it at Millwall. He's getting along fine, and I think he'll start. The main question mark really is who's going to be in the centre of the attack. Will it be Tom Bradshaw, who has been full of running but unlucky in front of goal, and unlucky in is one way to put it. Possibly Matt Smith may start to give us a goal scoring ability. Matt is not the most mobile, but he is a man who knows how to score goals. He may start. Will we see the kind of much anticipated Troy Parrott? I don't know. I think he will certainly be on the bench rather than starting. Millwall v Brentford games tend to be entertaining fixtures without, I personally feel, without the fire and brimstone that you normally associate with a London derby. I'm just looking at the previous results. We had that heartbreaking loss at Griffin Park last season, where we gave up a slightly lucky 2-0 lead, in all honesty, to a good comeback late in the game for Brentford. A 1-0 win at home for Millwall. It tends to be, in my opinion, that we are stronger at home and Brentford are stronger at home in the past, but you can never bank on it. I'm looking forward to a good game. I'm going to be following it on the iFollow. I expect Brentford to do well this season. Certainly the loss of Ollie Watkins, who's gone to Aston Villa, will be a big hole to fill, but Brentford do have a track record of finding players that you haven't heard of before, and turning them into stars. So it's going to be an interesting season from the Bees' perspective. It's going to be a very interesting season from the Lions' perspective. I think we'll be playing two slightly different styles of football, but probably closer to each other perhaps in that way than you will have seen in games gone past. So anticipating a good game. I always let my heart rule my head when it comes to score predictions. So I know I'm on a Brentford show. So you'll have to forgive me, but I think we'll edge it 1-0. Big thank you to Billy. All the best wishes to Billy and Besotted. And this is Nick Hart signing off for the Besotted fan preview. Thank you for listening to this short and sharp episode, dear listeners. Wham, bam, thank you, man. This is Nick Hart signing out for Achtung Millwall. We'll be back tomorrow with our regular Real Millwall fan show. Until then, thank you for listening. Bye for now. Arrivederci, Millwall.
Thank you for listening to Achtung Millwall. If you enjoyed the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a cheeky little review. Arrivederci, Millwall. Till next time.